Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm Phil Kirkbride, and today I'm joined by Adam Jones and Gav Buckland as we chew the fat over all the major talking points at Goodison Park. And, of course, preview Saturday night's game at Goodison when the Blues take on Aston Villa in another important game in this push for Europe. So we will, of course, look ahead to the game with Dean Smith's side and, of course, reflect on Carlo Ancelotti just giving his press conference at Finch Farm earlier this afternoon. We'll talk about that. The news that Decore is back in some form of training, which is obviously excellent news. Some interesting comments about Josh King and a little bit more light shed on the remaining six fixtures and when there will be. We do finally have a date for the trip to Villa. So we'll bring you all that in the discussion over the next half an hour, 45 minutes. I think we will start with the game this Friday's pod. Unusually, I know we tend to sort of leave it till the end, but let's talk about Villa, Adam. A lot of people understandably say it's must win. Carlo obviously set that target of five victories, one at Arsenal, four to go. Do we get the second one tomorrow night?
So unpredictable, isn't it? Especially when you consider Everton are at home. I find that over the last few months in particular, it's a different Everton team tends to turn up at Goodison Park than one that turns up away from home. So I think it's really hard to predict whether Everton will get that win again this weekend. But I think it's quite right in saying, I do feel like we have said this over the last few weeks for every single game that's come up, but it is kind of must win, isn't it? And I think, as we said earlier in the week, I think that Arsenal game kind of proved exactly why that's the case, because obviously we had that run of three draws, which were a little bit disappointing. But that one win just kind of changes the whole complexion of the way the league table looks, doesn't it? Because suddenly Everton got those 3 points and suddenly you're thinking to yourself, not really all that far off getting fit, still a game in hand as well. There's so many possibilities from Everton's point of view there. So the difference between getting 1 point and 3 points is absolutely massive. And I think that obviously carries over into this Villa game as well. I think Carlo Ancelotti is quite right in what he said in the press conference that, it's quite obvious that Villa are missing their best player in Jack Grealish. And, obviously he'd be a big miss to, I think, any side in the Premier League. But they are still a pretty dangerous side, as they've proven on multiple occasions this season. And I think in terms of Everton's home form as well, they can't really afford to take anybody in the league for granted, not even when Sheffield United come here in a couple of weeks, will they be able to take them for granted? So, yeah, I think it's absolutely a must win. If Everton are going to get those four or five wins that they need to get from now and the end of the season, you're kind of discounting that City game with the form that they're in at the minute. So, it kind of just amplifies the importance of this Villa game. So, especially when we're building up to fans finally coming back to Goodison, which we'll discuss in a little bit. But, hopefully you'd want to get that in a little bit of a run of form at Goodison. So fingers crossed they'll be able to start that this weekend.
Gav, probably asked this question several times this season. Which Everton are you expecting to show up tomorrow night?
That's a good question. Simple question, but it's a good question, isn't it? It indicates there's a problem, doesn't it, really, Phil, of inconsistency and inconsistency at home in particular. Villa, I think they're just in the bottom half, and I don't know if you have a look at our stats against the bottom half of the table, teams at Goodison, there's some bad results there, isn't there? The type of fixture we've struggled at since lockdown, really, Phil, going back to the last season. In June, where the home record wasn't that great. I would like to think that they've taken a bit of confidence, if not from the performance, but from the results against Arsenal. and also the performance against Spurs, where I thought we played well. And we're unlucky not to get 3 points in some respects, but for some lax defending. So, put it this way, I'm hoping to see a better Everton than maybe 3 weeks ago, based on the last two results, which have got like 4 points, haven't they? A crucial stage of the season. So I think if we have that, you know, Villa have, I think there's only, they've got one of the worst records, is it in 2021? This is the only Southampton, Sheffield United's got worst records, something like that. So if we do, like we did against Spurs, keep it tight at the back, then there's no reason at all why we can't win comfortably.
I'll ask you both this question, but I'll come to you. You mentioned the City game, and I think we've mentioned it recently, you know, that the final game of the season, trip to the Etihad, and we're almost kind of writing it off, but should we be? Can we afford to be writing it off? Because, you know, and we've said on this pod, we don't want to be going to the Etihad needing something, but A, we may need to, and I guess B, should we be dismissive of it? Because, as you said, the season's been so unpredictable. We should win tomorrow night, but it's so difficult to confidently hang your hat on a 3 points.
Well, that's it. And I think in the grand scheme of things, you know, City have been the most consistent side this season, but they haven't been, you know, all conquering, have they? You know, they've still had their slip-up results. They've had a couple of slip-ups at the Etihad as well. So who knows whether Everton might be able to do that come the end of the season. And I think you're right, you know, with the amount of games that we've got left this season, is 6 games that we've got left from now until the end of the season. With that so small amount of games, I don't think, you know, Carlo Ancelotti certainly won't be ruling out any matches at all from that, whoever they're going to be playing. And, you know, of course, you've got to consider the fact that City are going to, you know, are they potentially going to be in a Champions League final a few days after
there? Would be 6 days later, I think. Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, I know they've got such a deep squad. Like if they played their reserve from 3 at the minute, it would be Gabriel Jesus, Sergio Aguero, and Raheem Sterling, which is
rubbish.
It's all right, isn't it? Like at the end of the day, it's okay. But
you're not winning many long balls. You know, you haven't got much of an aerial presence there, though, have they? That's, you know.
Well, that's it. They've got no chance against Michael Keane and Yerry Mina as well.
Well, exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think Carlo Ancelotti will be ruling out any games. And, you know, as you rightly mentioned as well, Everton have gone to these bigger clubs this season and they've managed to get some decent results. You know, draw against Manchester United, 3 wins against Arsenal, Spurs and Liverpool. You know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility at all for Everton to be able to go to Man City, especially in this, you know, current season that we're in. It's not beyond the realms of possibility at all for Everton to go and to go and get a result there. I just still feel like I wouldn't want to be relying on that at all. I'd much rather get all the points that we need to get on the board as soon as possible. That's why I say, you know, it places a little bit more importance and emphasis on this Aston Villa game, especially with it being a home as well. You want to try and set yourself up in the best way possible going into these last few games of the season. So, you know, in an ideal circumstance, you know, we will just win the next 5 games and we'll be sorted by the time we go to City, but it's not going to be an ideal circumstance. So it is very likely that we will need something against Manchester City. But, you know, I think you're right. I wouldn't necessarily completely rule it out. It's just going to be very difficult, isn't it?
Gav, taking Carlo's target quite literally would mean we would finish with a 64-point season, which I think would be the third highest in our Premier League history. How confident are you that we can A, get to the 64 points and B, do so before we go to the Etihad?
About 4 wins, so that's winning our last 3. Well, let's look at it. Look at the 6 games. The 3 games at home is Villa, Sheffield United, Wolves.
Yeah,
I think I'm right in saying. So those 3 teams are tanking, aren't they? I'd say Villa struggled. Wolves are really struggling, aren't they? You know, pale shadow of the team you were last season and the season before, and United. So you'd be setting yourself a target there. I mean, you'd be saying we should be getting 9 points in those 3 games, shouldn't we really? I mean, and we are very capable of getting that. I suspect Wolves are always tricky opponents, but I think 9 points in those 3 games. And then you've got Villa away, which has not necessarily been a great fixture for us. And I think the crucial game is going to be the West Ham game, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
If you win the West Ham game, I mean, that will probably mean that you don't need anything from City. Or if you get beat at West Ham, all of a sudden becomes very difficult, doesn't it? Because you just get the impression that, you know, that's just a really big game for both teams, isn't it? Mm. I think that was the West Ham game. And in some respects, I know it sounds daft, I'd rather beat West Ham away and lose at home to Sheffield United. I know that's big, because you're stopping them getting 3 points then, aren't you?
Double impact.
Yeah, you know what I mean? If you said get 12 points, it's hard to beat West Ham and lose at home to Sheffield United.
Yeah.
And as much as that sounds crackers, that is hard that happened, you know. But I'd still take going to, if you get, you know, if you said to me now, going to City to get something at the end of the season, I'd still probably take that, you know. Mm. To be fair, but I'd like to get rid of our, get out the way before then. But it's going to take still going to take better than what we've seen, isn't it, performance-wise, over the last sort of 5 to 6 weeks.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
As obviously, there's three European competitions on offer this season. Champions League, which, of course, we're still in the conversation, but I think Carlo is sort of trying to sort of push the idea that it's probably going to be beyond the team. Fair enough. Europa League, still very much in the mix for that. And the Europa Conference League. What are your thoughts, I suppose, almost more as a supporter, about the Europa Conference League? I mean, the Europa League itself gets enough stick. I think it's a good competition. Europa Conference League, of course, becomes the third tier of European competition in Europe. What are your thoughts? Are you underwhelmed by the fact of going into a third tier of European football, or are you enthused by the fact that we would be going into Europe and back in Europe regardless?
I'm very much of the opinion that Europe, at the end of the day, whether it's a third tier or not, you know, you're still playing European football. It's still another European competition that Everton can try and win. And you'd suggest that if Everton was to qualify for the European Conference League, then, you know, they'd be well placed to do, you know, pretty well at the very least in this sort of competition. And I think, you know, the way that we're looking at it now, it's very much a blank canvas, isn't it? Like, we don't know how everybody's going to be able to react to this competition, whether, you know, teams are going to play weakened sides, or I doubt very much that they play weakened sides in Europe, but, you know, it could be the case that some, you know, Premier League teams play weakened sides, et cetera, you know. I think it's very much, you know, a blank canvas, and Everton can, if they do qualify for it, I think they can try and, you know, make it their own. Why not just go and try and win it? Because I'm not sure, but like, do the winners get automatic Europa League qualification? Do they?
I need to double check. Last time I did look at that, I think it was basically a few in the semi-finals. I think you got Europa League, but I might be wrong, and you might be right. You may have to win it, but I think there is some automatic qualification to the Europa League. Yeah.
Well, exactly. So I think the prize at the end of it's worthwhile, isn't it? You know, you get a trophy regardless of its, you know, potential standing in the next few years. You know, you get yourself a European trophy and you qualify for the highest stage of European competition as well, automatically. So I think, in my head, I think it's absolutely a worthwhile target for Everton to be going for. Of course, I'd obviously prefer Everton to be in the Europa League, because, you know, I think the Europa League started off a little bit, you know, a little bit shaky, but I think over the last few years, it's kind of grown in reputation a little bit more. So perhaps it's going to be the same thing with this European Conference League. Maybe it'll just need a few years to get going and for people to really start to respect it a little bit more. I think the Europa League is now in a pretty decent little place in terms of its reputation across the continent. So, you know, I'd be I'd be delighted if Everton got into the Europa League. I'd obviously be over the moon if they somehow managed to get into the Champions League. But I'm not going to be necessarily disappointed if they get into the European Conference League, because at the end of the day, the target at the start of the season was Europe, wasn't it? And, you know, regardless of its standing, that is a European competition. So I think it would be, I think it would be very worthwhile for Everton to go for it.
Gav, same question to you, mate. How do you feel about the potential of going into a third tier of European football? Would you rather it would be Europa League, Champions League, or nothing? Or is a return to European competition a step in the right direction, regardless?
The last point. I think there's a couple of things going on there. I think it's only the winners get through to the Europa League, by the way. Have you seen the qualification for the Conference League?
No.
It's like sort of like the world's most complex mathematical algorithm you could ever imagine. You know, it's unbelievably complicated. It depends on what coefficient you are and whether you're a cup winner and all this. And, you know, and it moves from country to country. It's a complete nutter. You know, you need like a week to understand the rules, you know. So, yeah, no, but answer to your question, definitely settle for that, you know, rather than non-Europe for a number of reasons. Any extra games mean more money, which you can always do with, to be fair. If we get deep into the competition, then, you know, you'll get some rewards in terms of the competition money. Also, gets used to playing European football then, doesn't it? Because you would like to think the following year we'd be knocking on the door of the Europa League in particular. So Carlos mentioned before, I think, about that ease of managing a game every 3 or 4 days. And I think it just gets easier to succeed, doesn't it, in Europe, if you play every year. You just get used to it. Players get used to it. You get used to it as a manager and stuff, working with the players. And, so I wouldn't say me nose up with that whatsoever, Conference League. It's at the end of the day, it means you've had a decent season as well, doesn't it? You know, 7th, 8th. We would settle at the start of the season. We'd settle for 7th and 8th. Yeah,
that's an improvement, isn't it?
And if this is the reward for it, you'll take it, wouldn't you? So I've got no problem, no snootiness about it. And any game, extra games are good. Some brings a few extra quid, which we can all, you know, as a club, we could do with.
I promised we'd bring you up to speed with the sort of revised fixture list if you haven't seen it. So obviously, May 1st tomorrow, Villa at home. May 9th, West Ham away. That's a Sunday, of course. May 13th, Villa away. I think that's an 8 o'clock kickoff. Yeah. Then 3 days later, May 16th, Sheffield United at home. And then sometime between May 18th and May 20th, Wolves at home with, hopefully, Adam, you can maybe shed a little bit more light on this for us. Wolves at home, hopefully, definitely, maybe some fans.
Definitely we'll have fans back. That's the entire reason. I think, you know, the majority of games that were going to be played that weekend, I'm not sure how they all lay. I was only really concentrating on the Everton one, but I think most of the games that were scheduled to be on that weekend have been moved back a little bit to allow every single team to have at least some fans back in the last two games of the season, because obviously I think every team's going to alternate whether they're home and away in the last two games of the season. So Everton will be able to have some fans back for the Wolves game, which is going to be, you know, massive, isn't it? You know, it's going to be such an improvement. Like we know how good it was when there were 2,000 fans for those three games in December. So there's going to be more fans this time round, and you know it's going to be really, really promising to have them back. Hopefully, Everton will be still firmly in the fight for Europe, and you know that could be the difference, couldn't it? You know, having a few thousand fans there could easily be the difference to push Everton on against Wolves, which is going to be, you know, I think every game from now until the end of the season is going to be a tough game, but you know that would certainly qualify as quite a difficult game in these sort of behind closed door circumstances. So to have fans there would be massive.
And of course, I think in the Times this morning that there could be 500 away fans, Gav. So we talked about that City game. We potentially may have 500 Evertonians inside the Etihad that day.
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, you seem like there's some events at the weekend, isn't there? There were 5,000 people without masks and stuff. You can see sort of light at the end of the tunnel here, can't you? Which, so by the time next season starts, that we've developed even further. So, that's good news. And You see, I mean, this is the thing for this season. I think we said about 7th or 8th being a good season, but I still feel, for lots of reasons, that we're not seeing a real season, and it's very hard to judge a club's progress. Well, how, unless they've been really extreme, you know. You know, I think Sheffield United would have struggled anyway, with all due respect. I think probably West Brom would have struggled and Fulham. You know, City are always going to do well, aren't they? But for that, for those middle table teams, finished middle table last year or two, last couple of seasons, it's very difficult to judge how you whether you've progressed or not, because there's that many, you know, unusual factors, isn't there? No crowd, you know, people being injured, people, you know, fixtures being moved around left, right and centre, you know, small pre-season because last season ended so late. You know, loads of different unusual factors. So although we might finish 7th or 8th, whether that constitutes progress in life for next season, I don't really know.
It almost feels it almost feels, Gav, the way that Carlo speaks about, because he often gets asked at press conferences now about improving the squad and stuff. And he always says, we have improved this season. So it almost feels as though it has become normal. And now it's almost, that is the prism through which football managers view football now, because it has become, how many months now? Best part of 12 months of playing.
We're going to play more than the season, aren't we? We're going to play, what, a season and a third, are we? Something like that. With no fans or very few fans. Yeah, I get that. And you would suspect over time that you know, things like training and pre-match preparation and all that type of stuff, you know, they've got it off to a fine art. But we still had half a season, haven't we? Where that probably didn't apply. Ironically, the part of the season when we probably did better. So, yeah, I've still got this asterisk against progress. I'm not saying we've not made progress, but it's how much progress, you know. And I think that's the case for a number of teams. But having said all that, we haven't gone backwards, have we? That's the thing. Yeah. That's the important thing.
Absolutely.
And
speaking of teams, obviously, you know, Everton's away form has been excellent, home form poor, but West Ham, we spoke about them earlier in the pod, and how it's a crunch game. They've flipped that on its head. They've thrived with no fans inside the London Stadium, and that's what's making me slightly nervous about that game, because I just think that, where, you know, you can imagine the old school Moyes thinking, let's just cancel each other out here and let's not inflict any damage, you know, let's just do a draw. They're strong at home, aren't they? And with no supporters in there, the shackles seem to be off.
Which is a bit mad, isn't it, really? Because, like, the fans are sat about, you know, two tube stops away when they're in the stadium. I didn't think that they'd actually have any sort of effect. But I think perhaps it is, in a way, like, the shackles are off a little bit for Moyes. You know, he knows that he's, like, it's probably a cynical way of looking at it, but, you know, he knows he's not going to get any sort of abuse from the stands or anything like that for playing, you know, too defensive or being too cautious, etc. And, you know, maybe just, you know, allowing the likes of Lingard and Fornals and Bowen to just express themselves whenever they want to express themselves, really. And, you know, it's kind of given them that little bit of freedom at home, which is quite clearly benefited them, because they're doing so well this season. And it's maybe something that, you know, I wish that Everton had done a little bit more. You know, I think I was saying earlier on in the season, when Everton's home form was really bad, I just don't know why we don't settle like an away team, because we don't, like, there's some sort of inherent belief that, you know, if we're at home, we should be dominating possession and we should be, you know, going at the away team. Why didn't we just, like, set up like an away team for some of those games and really flip it on its head?
I guess in those games with Arsenal and Chelsea at Goodison over December, we kind of did. And Leicester in January, we kind of did, didn't we? We were smash and grab and ended up with, what, 7 points from those three games? But it's been Newcastle, it's been Fulham, it's been, you know, Leeds.
Exactly, because, like, the belief is that we're a bit above playing like that against, you know, the likes of a Newcastle or Fulham at home. But I think they knew exactly the way that we were going to play. We were going to try and come out and go at them, and they set up to, you know, effectively destroy us in the second half because of that fact. I mean, I don't know. Obviously, it's hindsight is 2020, isn't it? So, You know, if we'd have set up differently, would we have got better results? Who's to say? We don't really know. That's the only disappointing thing that you can look at this season, isn't it? You know, there are just a little too many of those missed opportunities that we've had. But you know, saying that, we're still only a couple of points behind West Ham, really, aren't we? You know, they looked at as having, you know, this incredible season, which they have, in fairness, considering where they started.
Yeah.
I don't think Everton's has been necessarily a worse season than West Ham's. You know, if we win our game in hand, do we go above them? So, you know,
certainly, I think we'll go level at least, wouldn't we? Sorry, I have to check the table while you speak there, Ad.
So, yeah, but, I think regardless, like, it does make that West Ham game away from home a massive thing, doesn't it? And it's going to be interesting to see what happens when, you know, our away form meets their home form sort of thing. It's going to be, I think it's going to be hopefully a decent match.
And two sides go to war.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Gav, have you got any issue or concerns that, and I know it's a thing for some supporters of every club, but have you got any concerns that Carlo doesn't seem to set the team up in a particular style, that he changes the lineup every week now? I think apart from the first three games of the league season, he's changed the 11 and the formation has always changed. And literally now, I've never, in how many years working for the paper and how many years doing the Everton job with Martinez, Silva, Allardyce, Koeman, Unzi, Ancelotti is the most frustrating manager to guess, because the team sheet will drop and I'll look to Adam and we'll just both go, I have no idea what the formation is. People go, what's the formation? No clue. Absolutely no idea. So do you like that about Carlo, or do you like to see something more consistent?
You mean to quote Louis van Gaal, what's his philosophy? His footballing philosophy, you mean? Yeah. I think he's played like a lot of 4-4-2 in the past, hasn't he, and stuff. I think that's a reflection of this season, Phil, where, you know, players have been injured, players not being fit, and consequently, as we've seen over the last, you know, couple of months, really up until a fortnight ago, you probably only had 13 players to select from. You've had to, like, sort of put them on the pitch in just as a scratch team, haven't you, really, and just get them out there, and then we'll find out how we're going to play when the game starts. I'd like to think that what I think is best formation is at Everton, and with the best sort of, like, mix of players, is probably what started the season. No, back 4-3 midfield and three up top. To me, that seems to, you know, that seems to be at, like, the best balance of sort of what we've got collectively as a squad. Whether Richarlison thinks that is another story, of course, but that, to me, what we saw in that first 6 or 7 games before we got a couple of injuries, would seem to be my ideal setup for what we've got. But we may get a couple of plays in the summer, and that changes, of course. We've had three at the back, haven't we? And, you know, I mean, Ben Godfrey's only been here 3/4 of the season. I think he's played every combination of back 4 and 5, and he's played every role in that you can play. Can you know, he's played right and left in a back three, and centre in the back three, right back, left back. You know,
I think he played assistant manager one game as well.
So that just shows how much chopping and changing that we've done. That Ben Godfrey, and to his credit, has played every role conceivably imaginable in the back. It's not necessarily something I'm a fan of. But I understand why Carlo's had to do it this season, because, as I say, has been unusual circumstances, and that's brought unusual pressures. I like to think when we get to next season, maybe got a couple of signings in, things settle down a bit. Proper pre-season as well. I know there's the Euros, whatever they're called, this year. And you like to think that we'd have a bit more of a settled basis to work with to start next season.
Would be interesting if something for me to ask Carlo next week, maybe. It would be interesting to see whether he considers this season as in the most sort of mentally, tactically challenging one he's had maybe ever, or certainly for a long time anyway. But yeah, we'll ask Carlo that and let you know what he says. Adam, speaking about run-ins and injuries, some very, very good news from Finch Farm this morning. We knew he was back running, but we didn't know he was going to be, you know, certainly looking as fresh and you know, not involved because he was by himself, but good news about Abdoulaye Doucouré.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great. Great seeing those pictures of him running about on Finch Farm, wasn't it? And having those discussions with Carlo Ancelotti. I think it was, you know, it was very promising, you know, very early on that Everton were saying that they, you know, they hoped that Abdoulaye would be back before the end of the season. And I think, you know, the few weeks that we had very shortly after his injury kind of proved how much we missed him. And we still do miss him, of course, because he has proven himself to be such an influence in that midfield. So I think it's going to be massive for Everton whenever they do manage to get him back. I think it's just a case of, you know, not wanting to rush him back, isn't it? You know, you don't want him to pick up any other issues before the end of the season if he does come back. So it is about managing it a little bit. And I think, you know, Everton have been okay in midfield over the last few games. So, you know, I think our need to rush him back has kind of waned a little bit, which is, you know, a little bit promising. I'd like to have him back for at least the last two games of the season. You know, and you'd hope that, you know, now that he's back on the pitch running, you know, what's that, like 2 weeks away, if he can get back training with the team at some point, you know, fingers crossed he'll be able to rejoin the team quite soon. Did he have a scan this week?
He was due on. We're not sure what the outcome was, but assumed it was positive because he's back at Finch Farm and stuff. But you know, wouldn't it be nice for Carlo just to drop his name on the team sheet at the London Stadium next week in the big game? You know, I mean, that would be a hell of a boost, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would just be a confidence boost for everyone around him as well, wouldn't it? Because he is, as I say, just such an influence on the rest of his teammates around him. He has such an effect, you know, not just in and around the Everton box, but up at the other end of the pitch as well. I think we've been missing him, you know, making those, you know, late sort of darts in between defenders to try and get into the box or get to the byline or something like that. So, you know, fingers crossed we'll be able to have him back for that West Ham game, because I think particularly in midfield, I do think we need a bit of reinforcement against West Ham, because obviously they've got Suchek, who's going to be, you know, one of their main players. So Suchek and Rice in their midfield is, you know, very, very strong midfield for West Ham. So, you know, the more reinforcements we can have for that game, the better. But even if he's not back for that game, you know, any sort of contribution that he can give us from now until the end of the season is just a boost, isn't it? Because there was just those little fears when he first got injured that would be his season over. So it very much seems like that's not the case now. So that's got to be seen as a positive.
Have you yet to see Declan Rice have a good game against Everton, despite the...
Phil.
No, I'm just saying...
Why have you said that now?
Obviously, I take... You know, look, people who watch Declan Rice far more than I do obviously think he's a very good player, and I don't doubt that assessment. But in a couple of seasons he's played against us, I've just looked at him and gone, I don't see it. But, you know, I'm just me, aren't I? So, Gav... Moving on from Doucouré, Carlo was asked about Josh King again at press conference today.
it's a standard item on the agenda these days, Phil, I would imagine, isn't it? Well, the press conference.
You know, it's an increasingly sort of confusing situation because Carlo doesn't look, we're all amateur body language experts, but Carlo never comes across particularly in an enthused sort of way about Josh King. And he sort of, his answers today didn't really sort of do anything to dissuade me of that kind of opinion. Saying he had a small problem on his back, so he's not been available, but he's in quite good condition. He's in training, he's absolutely okay. Really serious, really professional. Now, Carlo is the king of not giving too much away and doesn't criticise players. But I listened to that and thought, this doesn't sound like a player that he's desperate to keep around next season.
No, I agree. Absolutely okay. I think. I'm not criticising Carlo per se here. I'm just making general statement about my manager say how somebody's trained well. You know, it's like, but you expect them to. That's the least, you know, you want. You know, trained well. I'd expect that. You know, if he's trained well this week, well, yeah, he should. He was a professional footballer. You know, I appreciate you probably have some days when you're best asset than on other days when you maybe not, but you'd expect everybody to train well. It's a difficult position with King, isn't it, really? Because if they don't put him on a permanent deal in the summer, you're saying, well, what was the point of having him there in January? You've messed up there, haven't you, when there was maybe other options on the table. And if you do put him on a permanent deal, people would be saying, well, why is he on a permanent deal? Yeah. No, he's not played. So whichever way, okay, whatever decision they take with King, it's not going to look right, is it?
Can the football club, you know, say he, because he, you know, unless there's a spate of injuries, he's not going to start the final six games. So can Carlo and the football club, although they have scouted him, of course, you know, and looked at him in that respect, can the football club hand a permanent deal to a player who hasn't started a game, who's made a handful of appearances off the bench, and take that risk? Because because Josh King won't accept another 12-month deal or another 6-month deal. He'll want 3 years, which is fair.
3 years, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
It would feel like a huge gamble to me.
Exactly. What is it? How old is he? Is he 29?
Yes.
How old is he?
29.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, it's all right getting Rodriguez at 28, 29 on a 2-year deal, isn't it? With all due respect. Getting Josh King on a, you know, 2 or 3 year deal at 29 is a completely different thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You throw to Corey and Alan with Rodriguez, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
The King, perennially, we've been linked with him in the past, unless I'm,
no, we have, yeah.
You know, not remember. We have been linked with him in the past, 3 or 4 years ago, maybe. If only because he always used to score against us for Bournemouth, then he's one of the, one of our regular hit lists, wasn't he? Now, I get the impression with Carlo's language and sort of use of words and stuff. Put it this way, if you're trying to pick up a player by saying how well they've trained, that not, in my experience, means they're not staying.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, it was something they had to do, I suppose, to bring somebody in, but if it's not worth it, it happens, doesn't it? I mean, a worse thing would have been if they've come in an 18-month contract and not played for 4 or 5 months, that would have been the time to worry, I think.
Yeah. Adam, have you got any alternative view on King? And I say a view on him, and I feel slightly sort of harsh when asked these questions, because it feels like I'm putting people in a difficult position because we've just not seen him play.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I don't think you can really have an alternative view on him, can you? And I think, you know, I think you're both right. Carlo's comments today were quite cleverly worded. I think it was the bit for me was when he was asked, you know, about the potential of a new contract in the summer, and his exact phrase in here was, I think at the end of the season, we're going to talk about if he can stay, if he can have a new contract with us or not. And I just think the wording of that phrase is very much like, if we're going to give him a new contract or not. And
if you compare that to the way he speaks about Robin Olsen, he's made no secret that he wants to keep Robin.
So I think it's very much, and you know, earlier when he was talking about, you know, he's had a back problem which has ruled him out of training, but then he admitted it was his technical decision that's been keeping him out the side, because I was very, very much disagree with, to be honest. I don't think we've had any options. We've had Nathan Broadhead coming off the bench, you know. So I just think, it's a shame for Josh King, isn't it, that it hasn't worked out for him. And I think, you know, the more it goes on, it does just look like a bit of a panic decision from Everton, doesn't it? They kind of did get to the end of that January transfer window and they were a bit like, oh, we do need to bring someone in here who can play, you know, across all those front three positions. And, you know, King did fit into that mould. And unfortunately, it just seems that he's not got the right qualities that Ancelotti wants. I think Gav's right. That sometimes that happens, and you know, it's going to go down as an error for Everton. But you know, Everton have had some majorly more expensive errors in the recent past. So you know, to take a bit of a loss on Josh King for a few months, I think in the grand scheme of things, it's fine, isn't it? You know, it would have been nice if it had worked out a little bit better. But you know, I think, you know, for all parties concerned, I think it's probably going to be better if we just go separate ways in the summer.
Could just say, by the way, sorry, Phil, just say, what's the difference between the decision and the technical decision? Is there something I'm missing there?
I think technical decision is a polite way of managers saying that the player was just dropped. Or Yeah. Okay. Silver often said it to me. I remember vividly in the corridors at Molineux on the opening day of the 2018 season. And I said, why is there no Ademola? And it's like, technical decision, with that look in his eyes, if to say, you know what I really mean, but I'm going to say technical decision.
Okay.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Gav, just without sort of going down a Moyes Keane rabbit hole, we're sort of saying, look, this doesn't look like it's going to work out for Josh King. Moyes Keane's due to come back to the football club, but I think we all know that if a suitable offer comes in, he will leave. There is a hole there for the backup striker. Now I'm not saying the football club should go and, you know, break the bank for a backup striker, but it's an important position, and it feels like it's something that, you know, if Keane does leave, it needs to be got right. And, you know, we've been fortunate in the sense that we've managed to cope without a backup striker this season. We're still in the hunt for Europe without a backup striker. We had Cenk, didn't play much, and he's gone on loan, and obviously, sadly, he's now injured. Josh King hasn't played hardly at all. We've coped without a backup striker, but it feels like, I think we've kind of got away with it a little bit, and I don't think that the squad could get away with it next season.
No, we've got away with it because Calvert-Lewin started the season like house on fire, didn't he? You know, and it was 11 goals in 11 games, now got 3-16. And since then, we've had a bit of mix and match, haven't we? James has scored a few, Richarlison had a bit of a purple patch for about 4 or 5 games. But apart from that, it's an interesting one, but I don't really want to go down a Moyes Keane rabbit hole, as you say. I think it should be just widen the conversation, Phil, just to say, we just need more goals from the team, full stop.
Yes.
You know, the answer may not be a reserve striker. But the answer may be a right-sided midfielder stroke forward who can score goals. Yeah, like somebody like, I don't know, a young Theo Walcott. You know, something like that, you know.
We've got an old Theo Walcott.
Yeah. He's been subject of a technical decision, hasn't he? I think we need a striker, obviously. I think if Moyes Keane goes, but I think also as well, within, I don't want to say rebuilding, in terms of enhancing and augmenting the squad, I think the emphasis needs to be, can that player score goals? Because we just got, I mean, Decore, we've got a couple. Alan, not really sure. Tom Davies, not really sure. You know, go to the whole team. Gomez, no. I mean, our goal scoring options, apart from set pieces, are really limited to what? 3 or 4 players? Gilfy, James, Richarlison and DCL. And you don't often see them 4 on the pitch together. So it's a backup striker and going down the rabbit hole, a transfer policy that brings more goals, I think, to the team. Because have we got the lowest in the top 10 by some distance as a fourth?
I checked the league table. Yeah. If we do beat West, do win our game in hand and go level on points with West Ham, our goal difference is inferior to the tune of 6. So not impossible to overturn, but...
But we have been...
It's still 6-goal swing, isn't it?
Yeah, we had that early season flurry, but I would imagine since then, probably since October, we've probably been averaging a goal a game, haven't we? Hmm. I think I looked at it as a 31 goals in 28 Premier League games, something like that, which is not great, is it? Something like that, I can't imagine.
So in 32 games, we've scored 44 goals.
Yeah, but if you take the first 4 or 5 games out of that field, when we had the 5 and the 4 at home, you're probably talking maybe, I don't know, 31 and 28, something like that. Which isn't great. And I mean, last week we won 5 and 0 goals, didn't we?
Our goal difference to the top 8, our goal difference is +4, Spurs +18, Liverpool +16, West Ham +10, Chelsea +20, Leicester 22. United 29, City 5,003.
But they're reduced on the last day of the season, Phil. So you can. But that, you know what I mean. That's the thing, isn't it? I mean, I suppose it's a sign of good management. You must have managed games well or something like that to get in that position where you barely got a positive goal difference, but you're quite high up the table. Probably means that you've scraped quite a few games, in my experience. I mean, Moyes was an expert at that, wasn't he? You have a look at his goal difference at the end of the season, and it wasn't that great, but you'd have a look, he'd be sixth or seventh, you know?
Yeah, goal difference in ball possession. I did a piece a couple of months ago saying, the best Moyes teams of the Everton era barely saw the ball, but
getting to
Europe. Just a last one then on squad strengthening and something. Gav mentioned goals and what have you. Do you subscribe to the idea, and I've seen people mention it, and we don't know quite for certain yet if it would be on the agenda, but do you subscribe to the idea that we would need more goals from midfield? And I don't mean wingers, I mean central midfield. Do we need to improve that area?
Yeah, I think, you know, going back to even Abdoulaye Doucouré, I think probably one of the, you know, main concerns that Everton fans had for, you know, the majority of the season was that while he was getting forward into those good positions, he wasn't actually scoring a lot of goals. Like, I think he ended up chipping in with a couple, but, you know, not the kind of amounts that Everton particularly needed. I think it's something that's, you know, troubled André Gomes throughout his time at Everton, hasn't it? The fact that he's only scored once, is it?
Yeah, Wolves. An absolute belter against Wolves, never again.
Yeah, for somebody who's meant to be, you know, this box-to-box sort of creative sort of midfielder, you do kind of expect them to get some sort of goals from that position, don't you? I think, you know, there's a lack of goals from Allen and a lack of goals from Tom Davis, of course, as well. But, you know, with the fact that they play in a more defensive role most of the time, I would maybe let them off a little bit. But, yeah, I probably would say that Everton do need more goals from that midfield position. I think, you know, obviously, I think once Doucouré, you know, gets the players around him and gets into the swing of things, I think if you give him the service, he will start scoring goals. I think Gomes is probably the one to look at in that sort of instance, isn't he? Because, you know, if he even gets the service, is he gonna score you the, you know, let's say even just, you know, between 5 and 10 goals a season? You know, that's kind of what you want, you know, especially if you're going to be chasing Europe and you're planning to go the distance in a couple of competitions. You know, you do kind of need your midfielders to start chipping in with goals. It can't just be about the strikers or the wingers, etc. We've had centre-backs scoring goals. We've had defenders scoring goals, you know. So the fact that André Gomes can't himself on the score sheet, I think does become a little bit of a concern. So, you know, it's either going to be the case that, you know, André needs to kind of improve his output going forward. I'm not sure whether we've got the right system for him to be able to do that at the minute. But, you know, I do think, you know, that it's a criticism that can be aimed at him, or whether, you know, Everton, you know, go into the transfer market and try and look for a midfielder who can, you know, do the same amount of work as André Gomes in, you know, further back in the pitch and still be able to contribute up the other end of the pitch as well, especially if we're going to be playing, you know, as Gav says, in the 4-3-3 formation that I think is probably best suited to us. You do kind of need those two more advanced midfielders to, you know, be getting forward that little bit more and, you know, contributing with some sort of like goals and assists at least at the edge of the box. And, you know, while I do have confidence that Doucouré can do that, I don't really have the same amount of confidence in Gomes to do that. So, yeah, I would probably suggest that, yeah, we do need goals from midfield.
Yeah, it can just add to that point, Phil. I know time's of the essence, but I do think we've been hamstrung this year in that area of the pitch because we've not had a natural defensive midfielder who will just sit in front of the back four. You said there, Ad, quite rightly, if you play 4-3-3, you want somebody to sit and let the other two go forward a little bit more. We've sort of been playing a sort of little bit of a mix and match, haven't we, where we've had two sitting and one sort of meandering forward, and we've not really had somebody whose game is an experience is sitting in front of the back four and protecting it and enabling, you know, the other two to get further up the pitch and make themselves a nuisance in the opposite penalty area.
I think the choice phrase there was meandering. I think that reflects the lack of pace across the team, doesn't it?
Freudian slip, I think it's called, Phil. Yeah.
I mean, and again, a discussion for another day, but on the live Q&A we did earlier this week, I was chatting to some supporters and that topic came up, and know, it pace has got to be added this summer. It really is a key attribute that the team needs. Right back, wing, maybe midfield, but we will see. We will see what happens. Chaps, thanks very much for your company. Sorry, wait, how rude of me. I need to get you through my score, don't I?
See, right. I was going to say, I got it right last week, Phil. Right at the end. So remember somebody said, like, on Twitter that I got it right, and they said, because I'm so hopeless at this, it was very much an afterthought and very rushed thought, and just said 1-0 just for the sake of it. So I'm not thinking at all about this. It's just going to be the first score that pops into my head. Overthinking things, obviously.
Gav, as you got it right, you go first. What's the Everton
Villa? I've been thinking about this all week, obviously. a nice solid 2-0, I think, to the Mighty Blues. I think I like a regulation 2-0 at this stage of the season. I think we're capable of it.
Yeah. Ad?
I'm going to go a bit tighter. I'm going to go 2-1. I just think our defensive lapses at Goodison are just they're concerning me a little bit. And with Ollie Watkins up front for them, I think he's got a bit about him. So I fancy he might score against us, but I'm backing us to take a couple more of our chances this time. So 2-1.
I don't know why I'm feeling so confident. 3-1. That's just a bit of a hark back to the earlier in the season at home when we were a little bit more free flowing. You know, everybody fit apart from Decore and Gabamin. So the onus, I think, as we talked about, is maybe to be a little bit more front foot and, you know, chasing victories that we need for Europe. So I think 3-1, but we will see. Okay, we'll go again. Chaps, thanks very much for your company. Thank you very much for listening. Of course, we won't be on social media across the weekend because as you're listening to this, of course, the football-wide boycott of social media has started. But you, of course, can visit our website across the weekend to keep up to date with the game. And of course, we will be back. The lads will be back Monday or Tuesday to record a reflection pod on what hopefully is an important victory for the Blues. This has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.